Let me remind all of ourselves to cultivate the altruistic motivation, seeking complete enlightenment for the sake of liberating infinite, kind, mother sentient beings. With that kind of altruistic motivation, which we call bodhicitta motivation, that we should all participate in this teaching. If we take a moment to consider purpose of our life, maybe we can think it in terms of two types of purpose. One is fulfilling purpose of this lifetime, and other is fulfilling purpose of future lives. In other words, we can think it this way, that we need to take care of this life as well as we need to take care of our future lives. In terms of taking care of this life, we need to succeed in what we do in this life, such as, we have a job that we need to fulfill. And so we need to succeed at work or in our jobs. We need to succeed in our education, especially the young people who are growing up. They need to be educated well so that they will have a better life, here and now.
So that
whether we are thinking of taking care of ourselves really well here and now or in this life, or whether we would like to take care of our future lives or work for the betterment of our future lives, in either case, I think proper motivation plays a very central role. Now, whether we go and get a good education, proper motivation, is important here, or whether we go to work to get things done, proper motivation plays an important role, I believe. But of course, when we think in terms of fulfilling purpose of future lives, that we could only do through spiritual cultivation or practice of Dharma. And of course here, pure motivation, proper motivation plays definitely a central or definitive role in this case. Of course, the best kind of motivation that we could have and that we should try to cultivate is the altruistic mind of enlightenment, or translated as awakening mind or enlightened mind or any other translations that are there. But in Sanskrit it is called bodhicitta motivation. Bodhi meaning enlightenment, citta meaning mind. So we call in Tibetan Changju Jisim, which is exactly the same thing. So if you could cultivate altruistic mind of enlightenment, that would be the best and the highest and the you know, level pure motivation that we could generate in order to pursue spirituality, in order to take care of a thing in both this and future lives.
Let
me explain a little bit more about the centrality of proper motivation place in the in getting education. This is more kind of directed towards our younger audience who are in schools at different levels, maybe in high school or college or university or whatever you may. Now, if you really develop the motivation that I go to school, I'm really going to stay focused and get a good education, not just for my own sake only, but really for the sake of benefiting many people and many beings. And of course here, when we think in terms of many, and if possible, you can think in terms of everybody, or at least we could think in terms of larger society per se, that I'm here getting good education, not just because then I'll get a good life afterwards for myself, but more like I can bring good contribution, I can benefit society at large, my country at large, many other people at large in my society, then I think really the getting your education becomes much more meaningful. And also because of that motivation, I think that you're more likely to succeed in what in your education and in bringing benefits to others. So here, the pure motivation or the proper motivation, it really is a driving mechanism behind all the efforts you make in having a good education, so that you're not just going to be selfishly, okay, I get good education and then I get good make teacher. Didn't say that, but that could be the point. A lot of money and then rich and famous. But I'm really going to be a very contributing member of the society. And in the case of people who need to go to work, maybe you have your own families to take care of. And as you have heard Geshe-la say, that maybe you're working for some company or some organization, whatever the case may be. Just don't go there with the mindset that, okay, I'm working at this company and, so I just need to work to get by or whatever. I mean, that really, so to speak, doesn't cut it, if you will. You want to think more in terms of a larger kind of a framework of mind, which is that, okay, I go to work because I need to work, but at the same time, so that I will be able to take care, better care of my families, okay? And so that my families, maybe as they grow up, they will be able to contribute to the society. Or that when I go to work, at least, you know, I always try to maintain positive attitudes. You know, I don't go there with some kind of a, you know, cheating mind. Okay, how can I best cheat and, you know, get by, you know? Or, you know, go there and hurt someone's feelings, or, you know, but go there with a really positive, attitude that if there's any way I could help anybody at work, I would be happy to do that. Or at least I'm going to have a positive mindset and relationship with the people at work. Okay? So in that way, I'm also influencing and benefiting many others. And of course, maybe then through your own work, you know, you may not realize it, you are able to, with a good motivation, bring benefit to many other people in the society. So it's not just, you know, 7-Eleven work there. It's not just working for a company called XYZ, but you are really, how to say, the way you think about your work is such that you are able to generate a lot of positive energy and make contributions in your own ways to the society, to your family, and to your community. The point I'm trying to make here, you know, underneath all these explanations about motivation and all this kind of stuff, is that, you know, if we really cultivate proper motivation, the things which we do, which are considered ordinary activities and ordinary works, which seems like, you know, very ordinary, but these could, you know, have a spiritual meaning and significance. Because motivation is very central, it undergirds either pure motivation, beneficial motivation, you know, it underpins our ordinary, what seems to be work, school, and this and that, but they could have a really spiritual significance. Of course, in order to take care of ourselves in our future lives, there is no other alternative or option. There's no plan B, there's just only, you know, plan A, and that is really to cultivate dharma or spirituality. In order to, if you will, motivate ourselves really sincerely to pursue spirituality or dharma, I think we do need to understand and reflect on problems and sufferings. Okay? And so only then we will really realize the true significance and the meaning of cultivating spirituality. And when we look at the first teaching Shakyamuni Buddha gave, which is called the teaching on the Four Noble Truths, Arya Satyas, or the Transcendental Truths as they were called, the first thing Buddha spoke about was the true suffering, or the truth of the suffering. It's almost like he's laying out the facts. Just look for yourself, all these problems, all these sufferings in samsara. God understands these things. So once we really understand deeply problems and sufferings that we face in our life, that others face in their life, when we are in samsara or cyclical existence, obviously, nobody wants to be in this kind of a state of suffering. We want to get out. See, so once we really understand, truly feel that the situation we find ourselves in is not a happy situation. Okay, this is better, much better to be out of it rather than to be in it. Okay, so once we feel that, then it's okay. What is bringing all the suffering? I don't like. Nobody likes it. But yet we are running into these sufferings. So we get interested to find out the causes of suffering, and this is where then Buddha talked about the true causes of suffering, or the truth of the cause of suffering. He said, okay, these are the real culprits here, which make your life miserable. Okay, And then once we know what are the roots of the suffering, the truth of suffering, of course we get interested, is there a really way to cut, you know, uproot those things? And if there are those really methods or the antidotes, whatever you want to call them, we would definitely like to use them, you know, take benefit from them. And then once we see that, then we see, as you might say, the light at the end of the tunnel. We say, okay, there is nirvana. I can see it. It's there at the end of the tunnel. Okay, and so you said, okay, now this is where I want to. I want to go. I want to be free from suffering for good. So do you feel that, you know what, and what a big deal about understanding suffering? I know understanding suffering. I have been through that a lot, you know. I have cried over many issues in my life, you know. It's painful. And I see other people crying over their problems. I know what suffering is like. Do you feel like that?
Sounds like that.
Now, when we talk about suffering, I mean, suffering exists at different levels, if you will. There are different types of suffering. Yes, there are many kinds of sufferings that we are exposed to, and we really know them quite well. Okay, if you get a migraine headache, you know it is painful. Okay, nobody has to give you a whole theory about suffering. It is just one heck of a pain. You know. All that, you know, if you are suffering from some kind of a sickness or disease, that is not something happy, you know, thing happening to you. We know that is a suffering, that's a pain. But a lot of the suffering that we understand, as we think, okay, I know about suffering, I've been through a lot in my life, I've seen other people go through, you know, their lives with suffering, they are related with more with what we call the physical sensations and feelings. They're more at a very coarse level or a gross level suffering that we have access. We could easily access them if we understand, you know. But the suffering also exists at a subtle level, and this is where we really don't understand, you know, suffering in subtle forms. So in Buddhism, there's a whole theory on different types of suffering or categories of suffering, if you will. There's what we call, using a Buddhist terminology, it's called suffering of misery or suffering of suffering. Well, this is the level of suffering that we understand very well. We got a lot of experiences and we know what it is like. This basically means the kind of suffering that comes in a very manifest form and it's easy to see, kind of right in your face kind of suffering. We know that. But then there are other two types of suffering we don't know. And more subtle than the kind of usual kind of suffering is what we call suffering of change. You know, and that we don't know, it is a suffering. And below that, if you will, if we can sort of, you know, put a level below that, what I mean to say is more subtle than that, or subtler than that, you know, is what we call pervasive suffering. Now, this is really kind of a suffering that pervades the lives in samsara. It's very subtle, and we don't know that.
Yes.
So what do we mean by suffering of change, or in Tibetan called durva dunges? relatively speaking, a subtle form of suffering. As a matter of fact, all the things we consider pleasurable and happiness in our everyday ordinary life is in reality is a subtle form of suffering. For example, like we would love to, maybe if we are, you know, the kind of people who enjoy eating, you know, all kinds of, you know, kinds of food. I mean, we really derive a lot of pleasure, happiness out of eating food. Well, that seems like a pleasure of happiness, but if you really look at it carefully, it is a subtle form of suffering. It changes its nature pretty soon. And the same thing with, some of the other examples Geshe gave is like if people like to, in a boost, like in a drink, they think, okay, that's so cool, and you know, it's just kind of relaxing. Well, maybe momentarily, you know, but it is a form of suffering, the pleasure we derive from alcoholic drinks or even non-alcoholic drinks, it doesn't matter. Or people, you know, who like to smoke or who want to go high, or whatever case may be, this all looks like pleasures and happiness to us, but in reality, it is a form of suffering called suffering of change. And also like socializing, being at a party, and you know, just hanging out with friends, all these happy moments of life which we consider, in reality, these are in the nature of suffering. Yes, these seems to be kind of pleasurable and happiness, and they are momentary, no doubt. But then pretty soon they change into, often they lead into suffering. Okay? And if you eat a lot of the food you really like, you know, then it leads to problem. Okay? You might get sick. Okay? And so other things, and they easily lead to suffering. So this, in other words, the point I'm trying to make here is the kind of pleasures and happiness we experience in life from all these different sources, as we can call them, is not real happiness. Because real happiness should not change, but these things change into suffering.
So
I don't think we really usually consider these pleasures and happy moments of life as something, you know, form of suffering. Because we think this is a, you know, these are not suffering in our understanding, you know.
The song is, don't the difference be locked on the locked.
It is clearly stated in Buddhist literatures or Buddhist canons that, you know, the kind of perception we have, you know, that regards which is a suffering as being the source of pleasure or pleasurable. So this is, as a matter of fact, is a wrong conception, is a misconception, considering that which is in reality a subtle form of suffering, but we consider that as pleasurable or happiness.
That somebody.
Now let's talk a little bit about pervasive suffering, or sometimes people translate as extensive suffering. Khyaba, khyaba means it pervades, you know. So this is the kind of suffering which is the subtlest form, if you will. Now what it really means is that as long as we or others or anybody comes into samsara or cyclical existence, determined by contaminated karmic actions and delusions, okay? So that means we are being influenced by somebody is deciding, or something is deciding, you know, where we should be, or, you know, in the samsara. Oftentimes, we come with the aggregates, such as this body. So when we come to samsara, under the influence of contaminated karmic actions and delusions, and comes with this kind of a form of body, it automatically, like, you know, we comes with suffering. And it is as if that, you know, suffering walks with like a shadow. It follows us all the time because of the nature of life in samsara.
但差不多就是你懂得懂得给你一个糟糕的强强度。So
this pervasive suffering, which we call the subtlest form, that seems to be like the source of the other two types of suffering, suffering of change and suffering of misery.
嗯，像这他，差不多就是懂得他就死过了噻呢，再准备工作特别的，啊死过了噻，那等于我们就把他就死了呢，那就死了噻。
So now if you ask, so when can we see the end of pervasive suffering? If it's that nasty, you know, that really kicks up the other two types of suffering, is right at the bottom, you know, is very the root thing here. You know, we could see the end of that kind of suffering, pervasive suffering, once we put an end to contaminated karmic actions and delusions, deluded states of mind.
Oh, yeah.
And this is the point where we become what is called, liberated, or the terms we use, arhat, okay, in Sanskrit. You know, you have destroyed your enemy of delusions. That's what the meaning of four destroyers. Arhat or arhant in Pali, we call Tachamba in Tibetan. So once we reach that state of freedom, we become a transcendent, transcendental, but more than that, we are completely liberated from the state of suffering. So then, you know, what really we need to do is we need to make efforts mainly to put an end to contaminated karmic actions and delusions. Okay, so what methods are available to us in order to put an end to stop contaminated karmic actions and delusions for good? Okay? Of course, there are many practices and methods in Buddhism laid out. The most important one, the primary antidote or method or practice, you want to call it, is to realize selflessness. In other words, realization of emptiness, okay, or selflessness, is the antidote to cut through contaminated karmic actions and delusions. Because we need to break this chain or the bond of contaminated karmic actions and delusions, and the best method or the antidote available to us is to realize emptiness or selflessness as it is. So in order to realize emptiness, of course we got to meditate on emptiness, or we need to cultivate understanding of emptiness, or we need to cultivate insight into emptiness. Okay, so in order to cultivate insight into emptiness or selflessness, or we call it meditating on emptiness or selflessness, of course there are many approaches we could follow. But perhaps the best approach to understand emptiness is to understand what is meant by dependent arising or dependently existent. In Sanskrit called pratit samutpat, tender. Everything is related. You know, everything exists dependently. Yeah? And things are connected to each other. Nothing is really independent in and of itself. Okay? And so things exist dependently, not independently. Okay? Not objectively. Things are not independent of each other. Things are interconnected. Things are related to each other. So it's important for us to understand that kind of, you see, the dependent arising, or you might even call it relativity, you know, or whatever. See, that is the best approach to understand what emptiness is.
That is, and those down being, and they, any kind of phenomenon. 却感到第一呢呀，而且个一呢对呢，热当煎当，对吧？但一件门面呢呀，但一件对门工业这里，大伙这里一呢呀，个一呢对呢，要不就马多，可能让我们这边讲买不起枪用过这是。
So here we are really literally talking about everything that exists, okay? Everything that exists, exists dependently, not independently. So this is where we could use the term dharma, meaning all phenomena. By phenomena, we mean something that really exists, okay? So there are a lot of phenomena, which exist dependently in the sense that they are dependent upon their causes and conditions. That's how they come into being, and that's how they exist. Okay, so that's why things are produced by causes and conditions. They exist depending upon causes and conditions. Okay. Now, every phenomenon is not like that. There are other kinds of phenomena which do not have causes and conditions per se. Okay, but those phenomena also exist dependently in the sense that they, you know, for their very existence, they need to rely upon something else other than themselves, okay, other phenomena. So that's the kind of a, you know, connection there is, dependency. So if we understand how everything does not exist in and of itself from its own side, okay, independently, but rather they depend on something else besides themselves to exist or even to come into being. Okay, so then we are really starting to get a sense of what dependent arising means.
嗯，从上个月六号，看我们早起了，看到了，这些人怎么人怎么现在去得出事？这些人呢，之前那天呢，那女佣工给跟这些同事买不赢了，那怎么去干的是家苦土累死？这在怎么去家也得这些人家，这些人怎么现在现在都是呢？
A great Indian sage, Arya Nagarjuna, states in his, one of the very fundamental works of Arya Nagarjuna is called the Fundamental Wisdom Treatise, Mulya Madhyamika, okay, and Sashe in Tibetan, and he states very clearly, as Geshe-la quoted the lines from memory, he said, if, this is a technical term, if produced phenomena do not exist, how can unproduced phenomena exist? Okay. Now, if I'm allowed to change this, you know, because products, you know, that might confuse you more, if impermanent phenomena don't exist, how could permanent phenomena exist? That's the same thing we're talking about. Okay. If there are, you know, no such things as produced phenomena, then how could there be non-produced phenomena? Because what, you know, production and non-production, they are asserted in relation to each other, right? That's the relativity. If there's something produced, then maybe there's something not produced.
So, Sata, Tombani Gonguare, Tombani Gonguzani, Tombani Zani, Mevatani, Mevati, Mechan, Tennisan Consumers, the Tombin, the Yet, the Yakin, but the thing on the member host, Shooting the Yarity, took Yuji to treat the major input to be kicked.
You know, when we meditate on emptiness, we should make sure that our mind is not kind of in a state of a blank state, thinking about nothing. So this is kind of empty, our mind is just like nothing is there. Well, that's not called meditating on emptiness. Or meditating on emptiness should not be like, we put ourselves in a blank state of mind, now we conclude somehow that nothing after all exists in the world. Nothing really exists. Well, that is, again, you know, very absurd position to be in, because now we've gone crazy. What do you mean nothing exists at all? I mean, things exist. Come on. We exist, things exist. So if we put in a state of mind, okay, nothing exists at all, after all, that's really true here, you know. That is the nihilist point of view, and that's not called, you know, emptiness. So we don't need to go that far, right? You are meditating on emptiness, and then if you conclude, you also put in a state, kind of blank state, and conclude that, oh, nothing exists at all, that means you don't exist. Then who is meditating? You know? So it's really, not only very important, but essential, as a matter of fact, for us to understand, to realize that What is emptiness? What does emptiness really mean?
여러분께서 사실 견디들을 떠받기어를 제지기 니까 잡아 땡기니라 잠든 주스 사실 견디들을 까 키중 만유 만유 간데기 남비기네 땡기고 때문에 만들기 다 땡기고 때문에 맞음기 다 그다 만들기 단 메스카나
디 쇼들이야 슈마기 긴디 러브 샤프한테 이거 군대 숨겨두는 거 진짜 시원하
알아
진짜 시원하 땡기고 때문에 숨겨두는 거
이거 시작해 주자 괜찮아
Jerembuche, who is also called Manjushri Lama Tsongkhapa, he composed a very profound and very touching praise in honor of our teacher Shakyamuni Buddha. But that praise is labeled as praise of relativity or dependent arising, dental verba. So his main thesis here is, you know, the way he praised Buddha, this is the highest praise or honor we could give to Buddha is, that you are the kind of teacher who taught everything that has to do with dependent arising or relativity. You have said nothing, you see, precludes or that, you know, has nothing to do with dependent arising or relativity. So, you know, as we go through that whole praise, you will say that, you know, so therefore I prostrate to you, I bow down to you, who has most excellently, you know, presented an expose on what dependent arising is, what relativity is.
Mm-hmm.
His Holiness the Dalai Lama, I mean, often before he teach, he pays his deepest respects to Shakyamuni Buddha, who is also called Gautama, okay, the leader. And he did that at the Kasadin teachings, where we invited him to teach, and as Geshe-la quoted the stanza from his memory, so basically, in the verse, or the stanza, it is stated that, Master, out of your infinite compassion, the one, you are completely free from all the misconceptions and wrong views and extremities, okay? And you have truly realized the meaning of what is called ultimate reality. Yeah. And then you teach that out of infinite compassion to us. So I bow down to you, the Gautama leader. Okay?
Oh, yeah. No. That's just that.
So what I've just said is that if we truly realize emptiness as it is, you know, we really have the deepest realization of emptiness, that can liberate us from the state of suffering for good, for samsara, and we will be in what we call state of freedom, nirvana or nibbana. Okay. But then the thing we need to remember is, yes, we ourselves are completely fine. We are in a happy state now, really. But then we haven't abandoned, you know, all kinds of mental obstructions that are there to be abandoned. You see, we have still something left in our mind, you know, defilement or obscuration that need to be abandoned, and we really haven't taken care of the other, you know, sentient beings. So from one's own kind of individualistic and personal point of view, once we truly realize emptiness as it is, and it leads us to the nirvana, we're completely okay, fine. Okay, we are in the state of happiness, everlasting. But the fact of the matter is that we have really not, you know, thought much about all other sentient beings. And we still have got what is called the mental obscuration to omniscience. We are not completely enlightened yet. We are not a Buddha per se. Okay? So in order to get rid of this obscuration to omniscient knowledge, as we would say, what we really need to do is, we need to cultivate bodhicitta, the altruistic mind of enlightenment, or bodhisattva's attitude, state of mind, and we need to integrate that with the realization of emptiness. So this is where, you know, we need to bring together the realization of emptiness with the altruistic attitude. Now that combined practice, integrated practice, you know, will lead us to complete enlightened state. So if bodhicitta or altruism is so crucial to reach complete enlightened state, now what are the ways to cultivate it? Of course, there are a number of practices or the methods to cultivate bodhicitta within our own mind. Because we cannot go into details at this point, we have to return to our wonderful text, which is related to bodhicitta, no doubt. But what I want to say is that if we are really truly interested in cultivating bodhicitta, these are some of the things we need to keep in our mind, that we really have to, keep a good heart, you know, for everybody, literally meaning all sentient beings, not just the human beings. Okay? In whatever way we can help others, we need to do that. But there are many situations we cannot help others. At least we have to think positively and wish them happiness and benefits. Okay? At least our mind has to be in a positive state, even if we couldn't do anything literally to benefit sentient beings. We have to absolutely refrain from harming anybody, hurting anyone. Okay? So these are the essential parts of practices to cultivate bodhicitta. So here is one of my main thesis today that you should remember, that even if you are very successful in uprooting delusions from within your mind, you know, by realizing emptiness deeply, okay, and you reach the state of nirvana, you are called the arahats or the arahants or tachamba. So even if you are in the state of nirvana, but if you do not follow the way or the path of bodhisattvas or the Mahayana path, you will never be able to become Buddhas. Because in order to reach complete enlightened state, for anybody, for us, for anybody, we have to follow the way of bodhisattvas, the path of Mahayana Buddhism. So in our everyday life, we should see that we do not harm or hurt anyone through our actions of body, speech and mind. In whatever way we could help them through our actions of body, speech and mind, we should try to do that. At least, we make an attempt, efforts not to hurt anyone, but if we could, try to help others.
Mm-hmm.
So all the things I said thus far this morning, as I often do, is to provide advices to the new students and to serve reminders for everybody who knew about these things, including myself, so that we really need to reflect on these key points. So do not forget how I started my teaching. I said that for each of us, we need to do two things. We need to take care of our lives here and now. We need to take care of our future lives as well. So each of us has got two jobs to do, not just one. So we return to our wonderful text called A Miscellaneous Collection of Gautama Geshe's Advices. And so last week, we started off with Geshe Dongtenpa's advice to the three Kadamba brothers. They're spiritual brothers, not, brothers by blood, as we talked about that. And so they asked Dongtenpa, could you kindly provide us a concise practice that incorporates the essential points to get to the Buddhahood? Okay. And then Dongtenpa said, okay, here it is. There's only one thing to be cultivated, he said. There are many things to learn and maybe practice it, but there's one phenomenon to be cultivated, that is, you need to integrate emptiness with compassion. Okay? So now he goes on to explain what emptiness means, what compassion means in this context. The Tenpa continues to say that by emptiness, what I meant is you need to cultivate what is called ultimate bodhicitta. So then, what is that? Ultimate bodhicitta. Then he says, okay, what I mean by that is that you need to realize that in ultimate sense, no phenomenon is produced from its own sight. That is the ultimate nature or the reality of phenomena. Okay? Another way of saying that is you need to realize emptiness of every phenomenon. Okay? That nothing exists in and of itself, and that is the true nature, if you will, the final nature of a phenomena. So here, again, we're talking about all phenomena, literally mean all. So that means that both animate and inanimate phenomena or objects. We're just not simply talking about living organisms. We're also talking about non-living things or phenomena that exist. So what we really need to understand is nothing, and meaning phenomenon, exists from its own nature, okay, from its own side. Okay, that's what emptiness is. Things don't exist, from their side, objectively or inner of itself.
And nilu de yard nilu ju nen ju bai sang media.
I mean, we can of course work with a particular phenomenon as our focus or subject or object, whatever you want to call it. Again, you're happy to call it. Because once we understand emptiness of a phenomenon, then emptiness is same with all other phenomena. Okay? And so we may be able to take ourselves or self as an example, as our focus. And we all know that self exists or I exist. Okay? But the way I exist is not from my own side, okay? Not objectively, not from the side of self itself, but I exist, you know, in a different sense, dependently. Okay? So once we focus on a particular phenomenon and try to understand what's the ultimate nature of that phenomenon, okay? It doesn't exist from its own side. It has a nature. It has a reality, but it does not exist. That reality or the nature does not exist from its own side.
And that's around some of how over but then you can let you a child. Here you want to make me soon goes, make me now a miss. That the meet and now you are the meet and now rangit to the miss. Meet a rangi and meet and now the nilusion to the miss. This cables.
So I believe that many of you know this already, just kind of highlight it again, is many of you probably recite the Heart Sutras, okay? Pranjana Paramita Hridayam Sutra, it's called. And we come across, you know, things like no ear, no nose, no this, no that, no that, okay? Well, we all know there are such things as eyes or nose or ears, and they do exist. But what the Heart Sutra really meant is, there are no inherently existent eyes, inherently existent ears, inherently existent nose. In other words, there are no such things as eyes existing objectively from their own side. There is no such thing as nose that exists objectively from its own side. But there is a nose. There are eyes. Okay.
Rangi shiyame, that rangi shiyame, that number to be shiyame, rangi shiyame, that toba te yin, that toba yin, and then shangi sa rangi shiyame, that rangi shiyame.
So often, of course, we have to understand in the context of a particular school of thought, but the position we are taking here is that, you know, the terms we use, emptiness of inherent existence, emptiness of true existence, emptiness of objective existence, these are all synonyms. They all mean just the same thing, okay, in this particular position we are taking. So that means things do not exist truly from their own side. Things do not exist inherently from their own side. Things don't exist in and of themselves. That's the meaning of emptiness. Once you realize that, then you have got what is called ultimate bodhicitta.
No, no.
So remember he started off saying that, you know, we need to integrate emptiness with compassion. But the compassion in this context, it really actually refers to a conventional mind of enlightenment or conventional bodhicitta. Of course we know that compassion and bodhicitta is not one and the same thing. But in this context, the term compassion is used to refer to conventional bodhicitta. So of course again here is a particular kind of compassion, is the great compassion, not any other kind of compassion. So why, you know, you use the great compassion to refer to conventional bodhicitta, if you wonder? Well, it's because of the close proximity between the two states of mind. Because great compassion is what we call the direct cause of conventional bodhicitta. Or in other words, to use a technical term here, great compassion is the substantial cause of conventional bodhicitta. So they are very close, the proximity. Because of that, great compassion is used to refer to conventional bodhicitta in this context.
And bodhicitta is also very close to the Hindus. And Sankyu is the same Rinpoche, and the
As it is stated in ornament of Mahayana Sutras called Mahayana Sutra Alankara, it says, as Geshe-la quoted the line, you know, the root cause of that, meaning conventional bodhicitta, is compassion. Okay, so great compassion is the primary cause, the root cause of conventional bodhicitta.
Fine.
So the great compassion is the primary cause of conventional bodhicitta, but in order to cultivate great compassion, we need to, you know, develop affection, you know, towards all sentient beings. All meaning literally all, like including who we usually call enemies. Okay, then, you know, we might categorize beings into friends and strangers and enemies, but from the development of great compassion or bodhicitta point of view, there are no such things as enemies and friends and, you know, strangers. Everybody is a friend. Okay, so we need to develop that sense of affection, you know, towards sentient beings in order to be able to cultivate great compassion, mahakaruna. So when we think about sentient beings, we really have affection for sentient beings, we care about them, in other words, and then we come to see that sentient beings have not realized, you know, either ultimate bodhicitta or the conventional bodhicitta, then, you know, that really gives us a sense to, you know, feel great compassion for, you know, towards them, and cultivate the ultimate, cultivate the conventional bodhicitta. So this is how we could cultivate great compassion. You know, we reflect on the problematic situation we and all others find ourselves in. That is called samsara, single existence. Okay? And it doesn't matter where we are in samsara, taken for granted that the way we came into here is decided by our contaminated karmic actions and delusions. We didn't decide it, they decided it. So we could be anywhere under that decision in samsara, we experience one or the other form of problems and suffering. So that's the fact of life, okay, ours and others. And so what really truly brings us suffering are the contaminated karmic actions and delusion. These are the true real causes of suffering. In order to break this bondage or uproot these causes of suffering, we need to realize emptiness as it is, or the ultimate nature of phenomena. Okay? And when we see that, you know, neither ourselves nor others have realized this wonderful, you know, phenomena that can liberate us, then we could develop a sense of compassion to other sentient beings.
So 생명이 누신 때도 다니는 것 같은데 was.
Of course, there are many different ways to approach this, and you know, to do our practice. In certain wonderful prayers, for example, it starts off saying that all phenomena, you know, in the ultimate sense, do not exist from their own side. That is the ultimate nature of phenomena. But we and sentient beings have not yet realized the true nature of, you know, the phenomena. And because of that, we are going round and round and round in samsara. Okay, so going round and round in samsara, we bump from one suffering to the other suffering, and you know, so this is what we experience. And so then, you know, reflecting on this kind of predicament of our life, if you will, that we started to develop a sense of, you know, we wish how nice it would be if sentient beings are free from suffering and its causes. Right? May I be able to do so? Okay, may they themselves be able to do so. Okay? How nice it would be if sentient beings are free from suffering, have the real happiness. May I be able to do that? May they be able to do that for themselves? So this is how we cultivate what is known as the four immeasurables. Immeasurable love, immeasurable compassion, immeasurable sense of joy, immeasurable sense of equanimity. See, you can approach the practice from many different angles, if you will, see, but relating to the fact that none of us has yet got the realization of emptiness as it is. So because of that, meaning all the rational given already, you know, why we need to cultivate, you know, the two types of bodhicitta. So then here, Abdhundaba goes on to advise us that, you know, practitioners of Mahayana Buddhism, or Bodhisattva way of life, must first make efforts to cultivate the two types of bodhicitta, ultimate bodhicitta and the conventional bodhicitta, that they have not yet cultivated in their mind, which means most of us. Right? Or maybe all of us here.
Yeah. Okay.
So first we need to generate these two minds of enlightenment within ourselves that we have not yet generated. But second, once we have generated these minds of enlightenment within ourselves, we need to sustain them. We need to further the development of these two minds of enlightenment. That's what we need to do in the middle. So first we generate the two minds of enlightenment in our mind that we have not yet generated. Second, we try to sustain and further the developments of the two minds of enlightenment. But when we do that, so finally, what we really realize or achieve is we achieve the two enlightened bodies, or the two kayas. We attain dharmakaya, or the truth body, and we attain Rupakaya, or the form body, enlightened body. So those would be the definite results that we will accomplish, realize at the end of our practice, if you will. So practitioners of Mahayana path, or those who are interested in this, you know, we have three things to do, you know, right? What do we need to, you know, where do we need to start? And what do we need to do in the middle? And where do we end up at the end, you
know?
So the first thing first, we need to make efforts to generate, to cultivate ultimate bodhicitta and conventional bodhicitta in our mind because we don't have them yet. So we need to engage in the necessary practices to generate those 2 months of enlightenment first in our mind. So once we have generated them, then we still need to further them, or in other words, we need to familiarize ourselves more and more with these 2 months of enlightenment. We have to develop the intimacy, more and more intimacy with these 2 months of enlightenment. So if you're wondering, okay, how long should I keep on familiarizing or furthering this mind of enlightenment, this is where in the Buddhist literature we talk about the five paths, and within the five paths we talk about the 10 spiritual grounds of bodhisattvas. This is where it's happening on the paths and the grounds that we are generating more and more intimacy with the minds of enlightenment. We are furthering them, little by little along the path and the grounds. So once we progress on the five paths of Mahayana Buddhism, and which include the 10 spiritual grounds called Dashabhumi of Bodhisattvas, so once we have traveled along this journey completely, or we have graduated from these paths and grounds, if you will, then where do we find ourselves? Our destination is we have the two enlightened bodies, truth body, Dharmakaya, and form body, Rupakaya. So once we have actualized these enlightened bodies, or another way of saying is once we have become complete enlightened beings, then we have fulfilled what we call the complete purposes of our life, as well as we are in a complete position to fulfill the purposes of others' lives. So we have completely fulfilled our purposes of life once we are in the complete enlightened state, once we are Buddhas. Okay, why? Because we have abandoned everything that is there to be abandoned, negativities and defilements, to be simple, we have completely got rid of delusions and obscuration to omniscient knowledge. There's nothing more left to be abandoned. There's nothing more to be realized. Everything is perfect, in this state. So our life is completely fulfilled to the greatest extent possible. So in other words, that we have abandoned everything that is need to be abandoned, in terms of negativities and defilements, and we have actualized everything that is there to be realized from spiritual point of view. All the paths, all the grounds, all the realizations, all the qualities, nothing more is there to be actualized. And as we also said that we also in an enlightened state have the complete abilities to bring about the fulfillment of others' life, which is to say that now as an enlightened being within a split of a second, we can simultaneously benefit billions of sentient beings. That's the kind of ability we gain as an enlightened being. So this is also, out of spontaneity. It's not like, the thing we have to do, first we have to think, and then we have to make effort, and then, a juggling thing. There's no juggling here. It's just all spontaneously flowing, every split of a second that you could benefit innumerable sentient beings.
What is the juggling?
Just a little bit.
So that that when you do not also two days and sing it, sing it, then that day, kiss your shirt. So, Sanji Kumba Toby, you know, and he kissed Kama Regionality, quick of a shower, Mango Tame, quick Marita, quick kill any shower, Mango the Patrick, to say Kama Kit, Nala, any city can do 2 years. The Nigga, you think Sanji Kumba Tonga, living in the Chamber of Chambers.
So once we reach complete enlightened state, that is where we ourselves are enlightened beings called Buddhas, right? So we have reached the highest goal that we could, you know, think of in spiritually. So the kind of abilities we gain is that even within a split of a second, we can emanate millions of emanations sent it to benefit sentient beings. Just literally, it just automatically and spontaneously, it just, you know, works within a split of a second. Now imagine that, if we can benefit, you know, billions of sentiments within 5 minutes, and how wonderful is that?
Same time.
You know, all at the same time.
Yeah. That's the right is.
No, it's a good thing. So we have in prayer requests for a number of people here, and it seems all of them have left us already. Anita Traspi, Merle Foster, Ray Mistrick, Emily Nalus, Nguyen Dang Khoi, Grandmother Norso, and so prayers have been requested for them.
Yes. That the nigga that shingi mangbo chong do was there. The one I get nasa yapa mangbo chiyore. That the nigga that ang ransu le the rawashi ni kimhelam jaya rawashi yo sumsang ang ransu kita. Kung so ani shingi tanzo yun. Ah, ngesong ngendo lapat ng isini sumunto tayo. Ani, ani, dili tinsa tom ni, sa yung chuetan jie ni, ani, kik, kaisa ko mito. Masi tindi yung isang kongres.
So we have got, you know, several names here on the list who are no more with us, but we also know that there are many more people who are no more with us. And we need to think about all of them. And then there are people who are struggling with their life. They are, you know, they're bedridden sicknesses and terminal illnesses and so forth. So we want to think about everybody who are in a difficult situation. And you know, the thing is that when we get these names, and this is like they are making a request to us that we can generate some prayers for them, you know, help them. So let's sincerely pray for them and hope that our prayers will activate some good karmas that they themselves created, so that they are able to find good rebirths through their good karma, that through our conditioning, their ripening of the karma, and may they be able to meet with authentic spirituality, and through their efforts, be able to grow spiritually towards better existence.
Shitang, Malam Jia, thank you, and then Mambu Kiwi, and then Rang Samal, Timothy here, the Power Sherry, there's a Sherry, the Power Sherry, the Sawatani.
Of course, there are hundreds of different prayers we could recite and say for in this kind of situation, but then we always you know, try to recite Arya Avalokiteshvara, Buddha of Compassion's name mantra, because then everybody knows, we all know that. And that's one thing we are sure that we all know. And so together, we visualize Buddha Avalokiteshvara, or Buddha Konyan as called in some other language, and then recite Om Mani Padme Hum. I want to be more. Let us dedicate our collective merit for the flourishing of Dharma, the source of benefits and happiness throughout the universe. May His Holiness the Dalai Lama and all other great holy masters, wherever they are in any part of the universe, live long and be successful in fulfilling their visions, benefiting sentient beings. May spiritual communities throughout the world and spiritual practitioners from all traditions remain healthy, harmonious, and may never face any obstacles in their spiritual paths and development, be able to have all the favorable conditions for spiritual growth, and be successful in fulfilling their spiritual aims and objectives. May this and other world environments be free of all kinds of unwanted pains and problems, and may beings find peace, happiness, prosperity, and spirituality. In short, we dedicate our collective positive energy for all kind mother sentient beings to be free from the fears and dangers of two types of mental obscuration, and may we all reach complete enlightened state quickly.
Amen.